It's good to be together this morning. Thank you, Brother Dan, for those encouraging songs. And sorry about that little misunderstanding there. You get used to doing it one way, and you just go ahead and go for the pulpit. So, if you will open your Bibles to the book of Proverbs this morning, we'll be beginning there in just a moment. And as we begin, we want to take a moment to thank everyone for being here today, especially with the snow and the delay on our worship this morning. Especially thank you to those of you who are visiting with us. Thank you for choosing to worship with us. We hope that you're encouraged by what you find here and that you'll ask any questions that you have about what we do. We certainly want to please the Lord in everything that we're aiming for. This morning, I want us to think for a few moments about a theme that's been on my mind lately, and I think has been one of the biggest influences in my life. The Bible speaks a lot about the friends that we have. And I've entitled the lesson this morning as Iron Sharpens Iron. Excuse me, I didn't get my animation correct here. As Iron Sharpens Iron. And I want us to think for a few moments this morning about the power of friendship in our lives and about how much it influences us. And what an important decision we have before us as we think about who we choose to be our friends and the influence that those friends will have on us. We'll begin this morning in Genesis chapter 2 before we go to Proverbs. And we want to think for just a moment about the way that God made us. God has created us as social beings. And when God created the world and everything in it, he went kind of through the different days. And the chorus at the end of each day is God saw what he had made and it was good, right? As you go through days 1 through 6, everything is good. And then we come to Genesis chapter 2, we're kind of recounting with a different focus, the different days of creation. But we find man in the garden, and the first thing that God says is not good, we find in Genesis 2 and verse 18. Then the Lord God said, "It is not good that the man should be alone. I will make him a helper fit for him." And of course, the Lord brings all the different animals to Adam, and there's not a suitable helper found there. And so the Lord takes a rib from the man, fashions it into a woman, and brings her to him. And Adam's response in verse 23 is, "This at last is bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh." So God begins this situation with man, and it's interesting to me that God created man originally alone. As he makes the man first, and then later he makes the woman. And I think part of that is to get Adam to realize that he needs other people. Even as Adam is in a perfect relationship with the Lord, at this point sin has not entered into the picture. God is in fellowship with Adam as he's there in the garden. But he realizes that he's not only made for fellowship with God, but made for fellowship with other people. And so God brings this helper to him. And I think that certainly this is immediately applicable to the marriage relationship, but it's really applicable, I think, to all of our relationships as people, is that it's not good for us to be alone in both the sense of just having people around us, being with other people, that we're influencing one another. And so God created us with this need for relationship, not just in the marriage relationship, but in the relationships that we have with other members of our family, other people around us, and with those who we would call our friends. And they're the ones that have a particular place in our life of influence. And I think our world is so focused sometimes on the romantic relationship that we sometimes neglect the friendships and the other godly relationships that we need to be focusing on and nurturing and developing if we want to be the people that God wants us to be. Let's turn to the book of Proverbs now, and we'll start in Proverbs 18 this morning, verse 24. As we think about the different relationships that the Lord has created us for, we certainly think probably first about our family. Those are the first relationships that we form as we are born into this world, as our mother and our father, our sisters and brothers, if we have those. But it's interesting that Proverbs 18:24 tells us that their friends can even become stronger in our relationship than even our own family. Proverbs 18:24, "A man of many companions may come to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother." And I think the idea here is closer than a physical brother. There are times where we can develop relationships outside of even our own family that become even more important and helpful and influential to us than even the relationships we have with those that are of our own blood. And this is so important for us to think about and remember, because to some extent we can't choose our family. We can't choose what family we're born into, what situations we might find ourselves in. But pretty much always, we can choose our friends. And if a friend can stick closer than a brother, we need to be very careful in who we choose to be our friends, because they're going to have a great impact on our life. And this is a wonderful thing on so many levels, is that for many of us who maybe come from families who are outside of the Lord's people, who are not Christians, is we may have people within a group like this, or those that we've known over the years, that are closer to us spiritually than those who are even our physical family. And that's a blessing that the Lord gives us, is that we're not just stuck in whatever physical family we have, but there are friendships and other relationships that can strengthen us and help us spiritually. And so this is a great help to us, if we will let it be, that we can have these friends who stick closer even than our own family members. Another point that we need to think about in this is in Proverbs 22, verses 24 and 25. I've been thinking about this verse in particular lately. It says here, Proverbs 22, beginning in verse 24, "Make no friendship with a man given to anger, nor go with a wrathful man, lest you learn his ways and entangle yourself in a snare." Proverbs has a powerful reminder of the power that we have over one another. If you ever notice this in your own life, there's all sorts of examples we can use. If you notice in your own speech, in your own language, you start to pick up on phrases that the people around you use. It's been interesting to me in my own life. Sometimes I'll say something and realize, wait a minute, that sounds like so-and-so. You know, I just use that phrase that I wouldn't really choose to use, but because I've spent time around this or that person, I'm starting to pick up on the things that they say. Also the things that we do, the way that we do different things. We have an incredible amount of influence on one another, even when we're not trying to be, and even when we don't realize it. And it's important here, it says that we need to make sure we avoid those who are given to different sins. In this case, anger. Don't go with him, don't make a friendship with him, or you might learn his ways and entangle yourself. This can be a force for good and a force for bad. And here we need to make sure we avoid being close to those who are going to lead us down a wrong path. It's amazing to me, those that I have known, those that are very dear and close to me, that because of their friendships, because of those that they've allowed themselves to be close to, have been led off of the path. Those who go to different schools and end up with a different friend group there. Those who just choose friends who are in the world. Sometimes it's friends from work, sometimes friends from other places. It's so easy for Satan to sell us the lie that the people you spend time around don't influence you. I'm strong enough, I can spend time around these people, and I'll be a light to them, I'll help them. And certainly we need to be a light. I'm not trying to downplay that. We need to be an influence for good. But we need to watch ourselves. Because the strongest of Christians, those who are walking with the Lord and are close in a good relationship with Him, if you allow those who you are closest to and those you're spending time around to be those of the world and those who are not going to put you in the right direction, I don't care how strong you are, any of us can fall prey to the influence of the people that we make our closest friends. That's a biblical truth. That's why Proverbs warns against it here. You look at Solomon. He had a dad like David. And yet the people that he surrounded himself with were these foreign women. And so they drew his heart away from the Lord. And he goes and he's worshiping these other gods and things like that. It's amazing. Even Peter, you know, even though he spent most of his time and life around the apostles and those closest to him, when he was surrounded by the people in the courtyard, the people that were opposed to Jesus, and they were accusing him, "You've been with him," he caves under pressure. And we need to make sure we're thinking seriously about the relationships in our life. Seriously about the power of the people that we choose to be our friends, because none of us are immune to that. We're, of course, familiar with the passage in 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 33. Do not be deceived. Bad company corrupts good morals. And that's true for any of us, no matter what, where we may be in our walk with the Lord. But it's also true in this good sense. Proverbs 27 and verse 9 is another proverb that speaks to this, where it says, Proverbs 27 and verse 9, "Oil and perfume make the heart glad, and the sweetness of a friend comes from his earnest counsel." There are things that are so helpful to us in our lives. And I just think back to times in my own life where it's been those times, you know, it's 2 or 3 in the morning and you're sitting up talking with a good friend, whether it's on the phone or in person. And sometimes that counsel of a friend makes all the difference in those turning points in your life. And many of you, I'm sure, can relate to this, where you've been at that crossroads, where you're struggling with something or you're having to make some decision in your life, and you're just confused, you're pulled this way and that by different people, and you go to that trusted companion. And it's like that oil here that says, "Oil and perfume that make the heart glad, and the sweetness of a friend comes from his earnest counsel." It is such a blessing for good when we have those in our lives who fear the Lord and are putting Him first in their lives, and we can trust them and go to them and say, "Brother, sister, here's what's going on." And we can just open with them and we feel free to be ourselves around them. And they can say, "Here's what I see." And sometimes they have to say, "Well, this is baffling to me too, but there's someone else that I know that we can go to." And the power of these godly relationships cannot also be underestimated. We can be on a bad track. We can be having bad influences in our lives and be heading the wrong direction. But if we surround ourselves with good people and godly people, we can be turned from those bad tracks. And they're going to help hold us accountable, hold our feet to the fire. And there's nothing greater that we can do for one another. It says at the end of James, you know, one who turns his soul from death, that this is the kind of love that we can show one another. And the power, again, that we have over one another, that we need to wield in a godly way. We want to ask ourselves and think about just a couple of examples this morning as to who is really your friend. And I want to think about two examples this morning, Jonadab and Jonathan. And look at these two examples and the contrast that they make. In 2 Samuel chapter 13, I will begin reading there. This is, of course, right after David's sin with Bathsheba. And we're going to see David's son, Amnon, fall into a similar trap that his father fell into here. In 2 Samuel chapter 13, beginning in verse 1, it said, "Now Absalom, David's son, had a beautiful sister whose name was Tamar. And after a time, Amnon, David's son, loved her. And Amnon was so tormented that he made himself ill because of his sister Tamar, for she was a virgin, and it seemed impossible to Amnon to do anything to her." Now stop right there. That's where things should have ended for Amnon, is he had this desire for his half-sister here, Tamar, and he wanted to do something with her, but he knew that he couldn't. It's impossible for him. I shouldn't do that. Amnon had a conscience, and he said, "No, this is not what I need to do." And if that could have just ended right there, it would have been good. Because all of us are going to be in those situations where we want something, but it's not something that we can have. It's not right. But verse 3 says, "But Amnon had a friend." And this is going to be what leads to the rest of chapter 13 and all the horrible consequences that follow this, is Amnon has a friend who, I think maybe his friend Jonadab, thought he was doing something good for Amnon and what he's about to do. But we're going to see, is Jonadab really a friend, a true friend to Amnon? Verse 3, "But Amnon had a friend whose name was Jonadab, the son of Shimeah, David's brother. And Jonadab was a very crafty man. And he said to him, 'O son of the king, why are you so haggard morning after morning? Will you not tell me?' Amnon said to him, 'I love Tamar, my brother Absalom's sister.'" And Jonadab is going to now give him this plan to get what he wants. And it's so important that we make sure that we are surrounding ourselves with people that are not just going to help us get what we want. That we're going to have people who are telling us what we need to hear from God's Word and saying, "This is exactly what you need to do." And as we ask this question, was Jonadab a true friend to Amnon? We're not going to read the whole chapter this morning, but to think about the consequences of what would happen to Amnon. By the end of the chapter, Amnon is murdered by Absalom. And it leads to death for Amnon, taking the counsel of his friend Jonadab. And there are such serious consequences when we listen to those who are worldly minded. They might be crafty. They might be good at being able to pull strings here and there and help us get what we're looking for. But we need to really be careful that we're not just looking for people who will help us get what we want. Again, sometimes that's what it feels like. And that's what the world teaches, is a good friend is there for you in whatever you're doing. You know, whatever it is that you're trying to get to, you know, they're going to be there for you and help you out. We need to make sure that what we're wanting is something godly. There are times where godly people can help us get what we're looking for, if that thing is a good thing. But it's so easy to let that become a power for Satan to use against us when we're desiring something we shouldn't have, and our friends help us to get there. But let's think by contrast about Jonathan, of course, the son of Saul, and his friendship with David. In 1 Samuel, backing up, in chapter 18, in verses 1 through 4, we find the first time that David and Jonathan are kind of knit together here. It says, 1 Samuel 18, in verse 1, "As soon as he had finished speaking to Saul, the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. And Saul took him that day and would not let him return to his father's house. Then Jonathan made a covenant with David, because he loved him as his own soul. And Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was on him and gave it to David, and his armor, and even his sword and his bow and his belt." It's interesting here that the first thing that ties David and Jonathan together is that David is coming from the defeat of Goliath there at the end in chapter 17. And Jonathan, a few chapters before, had been the guy who, you know, had the brilliant strategy, "Here, I'm going to take my armor bearer and we're going to charge into the camp of the Philistines." And Jonathan was a man of faith. And he said, "It doesn't restrain the Lord to save by many or by few." And, you know, of course, David, the man of faith, saying, you know, "Who is this uncircumcised Philistine? He should defy the armies of the living God." And both of them charge into a battle that they shouldn't have won. And when Jonathan sees that in David, it says their souls were knit together. And they were just going to be inseparable after this, even though they're in very different backgrounds. I mean, Jonathan's kind of the rightful heir to the throne, and David's going to end up being the Lord's anointed, and that's not going to come between them. An incredible friendship here. We could spend so much more time this morning on this, but we're just going to have a few snapshots here. In 1 Samuel chapter 20, when Jonathan has gone to his father and kind of figured out, you know, where is Saul at with all this? Is he really going to spare David or not? Jonathan has to be really honest with David and give him the bad news that you've got to get out of here. Saul is after your life, and he's not going to rest until you're dead. And so here at the end of this bad news, and again, Jonathan could have said, "Man, I love him too much to tell him that kind of news." But no, Jonathan loves David. He's going to be real with him. He's going to tell him the news, even though that comes at a price to Jonathan and at a price to David. This was hard for them. But there at the end of the chapter, 1 Samuel 20, in verse 41, after he's given the signal that David has to leave, "And as soon as the boy had gone, David rose from beside the stone heap and fell on his face to the ground and bowed three times. And they kissed one another and wept with one another, David weeping the most. And Jonathan said to David, 'Go in peace, because we have sworn both of us in the name of the Lord, saying, The Lord shall be between me and you, and between my offspring and your offspring forever.' And he rose and departed, and Jonathan went into the city." These are two men who love the Lord and want to do what's right. And sometimes circumstances cause pain, even between these close friends. But we see that even as they're separated, even as they have to go their separate ways in serving the Lord, that they are still strong in the Lord. And we're going to see one other time that they meet over in 1 Samuel 23. And I love this passage. It says here, of course, David here is kind of faltering in his faith, is having a difficult time. And in 1 Samuel 23, verses 15 through 18, it says, "David saw that Saul had come out to seek his life. David was in the wilderness of Ziph at Horesh. And Jonathan, Saul's son, rose and went to David at Horesh and strengthened his hand in God. And he said to him, 'Do not fear, for the hand of Saul, my father, shall not find you. You shall be king over Israel, and I shall be next to you. Saul, my father, also knows this.' And the two of them made a covenant before the Lord. David remained at Horesh, and Jonathan went home." Here we find a man of God who is both willing to be honest with David and acknowledge this back in chapter 20, but also a man who's going to point him to the Lord. He knows that David is in a difficult spot. He knows that David is weak, perhaps, in his faith at this point. And he strengthens his hand in God and says, you don't be afraid. And he knows he has reason to be afraid. Saul is the king. He's got everybody at his disposal trying to kill David. But he says, don't be afraid. The Lord is with you. And the Lord's going to accomplish his promises for you. I also think it's notable that Jonathan seeks out David here, knowing that perhaps in what circumstances David would be. And that's what a good friend will do. When we're in those times of need and they know we're hurting, good friends will try to seek one another out and be there for one another in those hours of need. Such an encouraging and helpful example that Jonathan gives for us. Not trying to give David just what he wants, but what David needs in those hours of doubt, in those hours of fear. And so the question for us is, how do I find godly friends? How can I find these people and surround myself with these people? And again, we need to, like Jonathan did, we need to seek those who live by faith. It was when David was returning from the defeat of Goliath that Jonathan saw him and his soul was knit to him. And I just think about that moment. You know, when David's coming back, you know, and he's coming in to talk with Saul, I'm assuming that's where Jonathan saw him, and he's got the head of the Philistine in his hand, and surely Jonathan would have known what was going on. And he's like, that right there, that's a man of faith, and I'm going to stick with him. And you know, when we live by faith, we're going to be called on to make decisions that will make us stand out from the people around us, and that will show what kind of caliber spiritually we really are. And when we see people who are of faith and we see them taking a stand for what is right, even when it's difficult for them, even perhaps when it's hurtful to them or to their reputation or whatever is going on, we need to say, you know, that right there is a man or a woman of faith. And I'm going to do everything I can to build a relationship with that person. I'm going to try to keep that person close to me. You know, David kind of did that in different ways with his mighty men, didn't he? He had those men, about 33 or so, and even the three who were his closest men. You can read that chapter at the end of 2 Samuel about the mighty men of David. David found men of faith. He found men who were going to do what was right and had the courage to stand up. And he surrounded himself with good people. And David himself fell pretty low, but he had his close friend Nathan the prophet, who came and helped him out of that. And so when you surround yourself with good people and you can discern and say, here's someone who's going to help me stand when I'm not strong, you stay close to those people. You make sure you consciously choose to spend time with those people. Stay in touch with those people, even if you're far apart. And make those people your closest friends. And another way that as we're looking for godly friends is in what they say, in their words. Our words, you know, as Jesus says, speak out of that which fills their heart. And the kind of things that you talk about with your friends sometimes tell you kind of the nature of the relationship and the nature of the people. And we need to make sure that we're not friends with fools. Fools will not be our friends. The book of Proverbs has so much to say about fools and the way that they speak, the way that they act. And it's easy sometimes to be friends with a fool because they're always having a good time. But we need to make sure that we're not having fools as our closest friends. In Proverbs 18, verse 2, just one example of many we could talk about, it says, a fool takes no pleasure in understanding, but only in expressing his opinion. And sometimes when you're talking with a fool or you're listening for the advice of a fool, they're just going to be telling you what they think and what seems good to them. And of course, there's a way that seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death. And if we're surrounding ourselves with people who are just kind of concerned with their own opinion and just kind of thinking about things from a worldly perspective, we got to watch out. Because if fools are our friends, we will end up walking like a fool ourselves. We need people like that are described in Proverbs chapter 27, verses 5 and 6. Proverbs 27, verses 5 and 6. It says, better is open rebuke than hidden love. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. Profuse are the kisses of an enemy. There are those who can be near to us who will tell us what we want to hear and you know, give us those kisses, so to speak, and the idea of being, you know, kind of buttering us up, if you will, telling us again the things that we want to hear in that moment. But we need the kind of people who are willing to shoot straight with us and say, hey, you need to think about what you're doing. You need to think about where you're at spiritually right now, because I'm seeing these patterns in your life and I'm worried for you. And I'll never forget, there have been times in my life where people have done that for me. I remember distinctly, it was my freshman year of college, and you know, I'm very interested in music and particularly in hymns, and there was particularly a stage in my life where I was just really critical about different hymns and about, oh, I don't like that one, I feel like this one's not so good. And it's a spiritual thing, but I think it really had just allowed myself to really become critical in that moment. And it was that we were there hanging out after us singing, and we had sung a song that I wasn't particularly fond of, and I was talking with different people about, oh, what do you think about this? And, oh, I think, oh, I don't really like this, and why do we? And the person, who I had thought really a lot of at the time, just said something, and I said, Stephen, I think if you look hard enough, you can find something wrong with any hymn in the book. I mean, like, it was just right to the heart. And I was like, wow, I really could in the state that I'm in. And I don't know if I said anything to them that evening, but I just remember kind of that moment when I was wounded by a friend. And I've looked back on that moment here years later. That still stands out in my mind as someone who was a faithful friend to me. And it hurt. But I am so grateful they had the guts to say that to me. Because some relationships, that might have ended it right there, you know. But that was so helpful to me. Because it came from someone that I trusted and I was close with. But someone who had heard me talk like that before. And they said exactly what I needed to hear in that moment. There were a bunch of other people around, too. It was kind of embarrassing. But it was exactly what I needed to hear. And I'm so grateful for those who continue to help me and to rebuke me and to tell me what I need to hear, because I still have to be on guard for those kinds of things in my life. And may God help us to look for those kind of people who will be honest with us about exactly what we need to hear. And on both sides of this, if we realize that our friends are fools, if we realize that we're surrounded by people who are going to be a bad influence on us, we've got to be willing to sever those ties at some point. In Proverbs 14 and verse 7, it says, "Leave the presence of a fool, for there you do not meet words of knowledge." And that's hard, because again, fools can be fun people. They can sometimes be very easy to be close with, because it's a good time. And sometimes we've allowed ourselves over time to make very close friends of those who are not going to lead us on the right path. And I want to be clear here, sometimes we need to help people and not just sever all relationships with people that we think are going to be, you know, are weaker than us or something. We need to reach out and help people. But the side we're talking about this morning is that we need to be willing, when we realize that people are being a negative influence on us spiritually, that we're willing to leave their presence and say, you know, I can't spend this time with you anymore. And replace that with something that's going to be helpful to us. We need to seek wisdom and seek wise people. Again, so many verses we could talk about, a couple of them this morning. Proverbs chapter 7 and verse 4, as it's describing wisdom here, particularly here in the context of fleeing temptation. It says in Proverbs 7 verse 4, "Say to wisdom, you are my sister, and call insight your intimate friend." When you find insight in someone, take that person. You stay close with them. In Proverbs 27 and verse 10, another exhortation, it says, "Do not forsake your friend and your father's friend. Do not go to your brother's house in the day of your calamity. Better is a neighbor who is near than a brother who's far away." If you find a person who's going to walk by faith and has a living faith in the Lord, you stick with that person. You don't forsake them. You hold them close. Because the thing I want to conclude on this morning is that friendship is a choice that we make. And it is such an important choice. And sometimes it just seems like we kind of haphazardly, you know, fall into friendships with different people. And sometimes circumstances bring us together. But we all have the power to choose our friends. We don't always have the power to choose our family. But we can choose those who we allow to be closest to us. And we need God's wisdom. We need God's guidance to make sure our companions are those who will help keep us on the straight and narrow and be willing to shoot straight with us when we're out of line. So much more we could say about this topic this morning, but I hope our minds have been stirred to examine ourselves this morning, to think about those that are closest to you. If you were to make a list, you know, of your five closest friends right now, who are they? And what do your friends say about you? Sometimes you've heard it said, you know, tell me who your friends are, and I'll tell you who you are. It's so powerful, the influence that we have on one another. And we can use that as such a powerful tool for good. And it can be used as such a powerful tool for evil. The choice is ours. If you're here this morning and you've been influenced by the world and you've never come out of the world, if you realize that you are, as James says, you know, you have friendship with the world, and you have to realize friendship with the world is enmity with God. If you need this morning to commit your life to Christ, to make Him your intimate friend, I love what Jesus says, you are my friends if you do what I command you. He's not called us just servants, but He's called us His friends because he shares these things with us. Is Jesus' friendship, there's no greater friendship that you can ever have. And that can be yours before you leave this morning if you're willing to make Him your Lord and also your friend. Or if you're here this morning and you realize that you've been pulled down by the world and you're struggling or you need the encouragement of your friends here in this congregation of God's people, or you're wanting to be closer, whatever it is that we can help you with to be a friend of the Lord first and foremost, and to find friends here who will help you out. If there's any way we can help you, please come to the front while we stand and while we sing.